Garen, I'm going to get you to define some words because I want to use them later. And it was such that I had to look up at least one of them. So are you ready? They're all words starting with the letter I. First word is invisible.
Can't be seen.
Okay, this is a little bit harder. Indomitable.
I would say it's something that can't be overcome easily. Someone who doesn't give up quickly. Okay.
Okay, the last one is insidious.
Something that is not overtly negative or evil, but it's the evil subtext that lies underneath a person's demeanor or their words. Did it come close
You're
at all?
very close, yeah. It's treacherous, a
Okay.
sense of slyness to it. These are all words that are describing our enemy. Okay, so I just wanted to make sure people understood what they were, because if I listened as a new person and those words were used, I'd think, that's a little bit beyond me. I'm going to have to look that up, but I probably wouldn't. We'll talk about it, and we're going to put it in the context of our great enemy, Satan.
Welcome to the Before We Go podcast, featuring Dr. David Maines and his wife, noted author Karen Maines. Here's David and Karen Maines.
What triggered this in me, Karen, was I got a very disturbing phone call the other day. It was from Commonwealth Edison. Supposedly it was from them. And the voice on the other end of the line said, "You haven't paid your bill for some reason in the last 2 months." And I said, "That's not true. I paid my bill." And they said, "Well, you haven't paid." And then they named the amount. And I was getting my checkbook out. I said, I did. I paid that. And then they gave the next month's amount. And I said, "I paid that one as well. In fact, wait just a minute." And I got my bank statement out. And my bank statement said that the first check, not the second one yet, but the first check had already come through. I said, "It's come through." "Doesn't matter," the voice said. "We didn't get those checks. And we are going to turn your power off in an hour if you don't send us money in accord with what we said." Well, I've never had a call like that before. And I said, "You know, you're joking, aren't you?" "Oh, no, this is not joking at all. We've tried to contact you before. You haven't been." And I'm thinking, what?
And about this time, your wife walks into the room. You're flustered and getting upset because you're not being heard. And
yeah, in fact, I said to the guy, "Do you have a supervisor? Because I want to talk to that individual. I've been a customer for years." And so they gave me a new name. And he said, "I've looked at your record, and you are a very good customer. You've always paid on time. But these two bills have not been paid." I said, "That's why I wanted to talk to you, because the first person was quite rude. And I have paid those bills. I'm right up to date. I've never been late with a payment."
And your wife says, "Hang up, David. It's a scam. They were trying to get your money, honey."
Dollars. And finally, I just said, "I'm going to hang up." And then I called Commonwealth Edison. And I said, "Would you tell me if I'm paid up on my account?" "Yes, you're paid up." They looked at it immediately and said, "Well, I got a call, and here's the number." Those dirty guys. And that bothered me. But what if I were single? What if my wife hadn't walked in when she did? Who reads the articles I probably should read? But it just was very, very aggravating to me. It got me to the place where I was thinking, that's a little bit unfair. I wasn't ready for somebody
really?
Lie to me or take advantage of me, and then on top of that, try to rob me.
Yeah, well, we don't really run in that crowd very much, mm-hmm. You know, not that kind of a crowd. So you weren't used to it.
I'm a preacher,
right?
So I immediately put it into.
You just spiritualized. You made a metaphor out of it,
yeah,
right?
I did.
A living metaphor.
This is 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11, the Apostle Paul, and he says, "I'm writing the way I'm writing to you," which was quite strong, quote, "in order that Satan might not outwit us, for we are not unaware of his schemes." And that's when I began to look up, here's my opponent, and I really haven't given him as much credit as I should, Satan, because Satan is invisible. Satan is
indomitable.
He doesn't quit. He just keeps coming and
right.
coming and coming. He is insidious in that he is sly, and he is crafty, and he is treacherous. And I'm thinking, oh man, I haven't given him the credence that I should probably.
So what we want our listeners to do right now is to take the scammer idea, and as we talk about the enemy and his approaches, just think of that scam phone call. You'll have it right there. Someone's trying to do you dirt. They're trying to deceive you. They're trying to take precious things from you, or hard-earned funds from you, or whatever it is.
Trying to pretend to be your friend. Jesus said about Satan, Karen, these are very strong words, "There is no truth in him."
Mm.
When he lies, oh, this is a great line. It's a funny line, but it also a very strong line. It says, "When Satan lies, he speaks his native language." Isn't that strong?
That is a wonderful, wonderful
phrase. "For he is
phrase.
A liar and the father of lies."
Mm-hmm.
I have a sense that maybe someone listening to us would say, "Satan, I mean, you're talking about the devil? Nobody talks about the devil."
He's a joke, isn't
yeah,
he? Kind of the red cloak, the horn, the trident.
The truth is, Scripture presents him as a very real being. We say the Lord's Prayer every day together, and then we say, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, or deliver us from the evil one.
Right.
So we have very strong feelings about Satan being real and being, again, this insidious, invisible, indomitable force that we're wrestling against all the time. I was reading, Karen, in Sprague. Now, that's a name most people wouldn't know. I was reading on a different topic, Lectures on Revival. When I read his words, he's basically saying when people become new believers, mm-hmm. we have to treat them with great care and give them warnings because their world is going to be different now. And one of those warnings, he says, is that, well, I'll actually read it from his words here. Remind that new believer also that, quote, he has a powerful, invisible enemy to contend with, the enemy of all good, against the influence of those whose wiles no condition in life can secure him. So he's saying you got to be careful about the enemy. Now, this is the part that I wanted to read. It is true of every Christian, you're to say to these new believers, that there is some one sin to which he is more inclined than any other. What that sin will be in any particular case may depend on the previous moral habits of the individual, or on the circumstances in which he is placed, or on some original infirmity, for his bodily disease is most likely to seat itself in the part which is originally the weakest, so the depravity of the heart usually concentrates its energies in some passion or appetite which is marked by the greatest degree of natural perverseness. He, therefore, who ascertains in his own case what that sin is, and who regards it as the most formidable enemy to be encountered in his conflict and succeeds in gaining victory over it, accomplishes much in the way of his sanctification.
So what he's talking about is what I have learned just really the last 15 or 20 years is called a prevailing sin. It's a core area of your life where you're extraordinarily vulnerable. And we've learned to live with that prevailing sin, but what we need to do is begin to name it, to examine ourselves and to begin to name what that besetting sin is. So I can tell what mine is, but do you want to talk a little bit about yours?
Well, I think they change over time.
Yeah, that's probably true. Although mine has been with me a long time. I have to learn to live with it.
I get rid of mine faster.
Okay.
I would say that my prevailing sin, which is new to me, but I'm becoming more and more aware of it. We had a conversation with a friend about trauma, and that friend said probably 90% of the people have trauma in their background. I thought I must be in the 10% because I have very little trauma in my background. Then I began to think about it more. She was talking about things like childhood sexual abuse, but then I look back on my life with the death of a son. That's a traumatic experience. I began to look at my life, and I named 6 or 7 of those. And I
said, it happened since you were adult.
Yes,
yeah.
And I said, Karen, you know what? We've gone from one trauma to another, losing your ministry. Mm-hmm. That's a huge trauma to go through.
Falsely accused in the public arena.
Yeah, saying we were new age and losing, in many ways, friends, whatever, lost income. In all of that, I realized that I have been very careful in my life not to allow those things to happen anymore, where you get blindsided, and it has made me a fearful person. And there are times I say, Lord, I'm not going to move out on that because I know what that's like when you get clobbered.
You'll get blasted.
Yeah, and so fear is something that's new to me. That is a sin, especially when you're afraid of what God might ask you to do. Because I, in my earlier life, I was very prompt to be obedient, even though it was a frightening thing, because I had to step out in faith in different ways. So fear is something that I'm wrestling with. In fact, I was confronted by a friend the other day and said, I think you're afraid to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I am. And if God told you to do it, you would be afraid to do it too. So yes, that probably is my prevailing sin, but it wouldn't have been my sin back at the time where
when you were young and eager and a visionary. And
yeah, God said, go into the city. All the churches are leaving you. Go in and start a church in that neighborhood with all the churches.
Not only that, make it an interracial church with an interracial staff. That was 45. Some years ago.
Yeah, and I did it.
Yeah.
You know, we did it. We did it together, and it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So fear, yeah, that would be a prevailing sin in my life.
Yeah, wow.
Okay.
Okay, I took one of those temperament evaluation tests. A friend made it available to me and asked me to take it, and that helps you see what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. So my prevailing sin is envy. This is a characteristic sin. I mean, it's something that has been probably a part of my adult life, and it manifests itself in this way. I don't want fancy cars. I don't want a lot of material, expensive clothes. I certainly do not want fame or recognition. We've had enough of that, and we've suffered the consequences of people knowing who you are and wanting to take off after you and such and such. What I envy is the fact that people of means. They live high but don't use their money to work in the fields of the poor and the helpless and the powerless. So the way it affects me personally is I would like to have more money to be generous. And that's a great thing. That's a lovely quality. But I get resentful when I don't have enough money to do what I would like to do for other people, even our grandchildren. I mean, you know, there's so many wonderful things that go on, and I'd like to buy a bunch of tickets and haul the little ones down there and expose our older adult grandchildren to the things I've seen around the world, where I've walked through those refugee camps and gone into those slums in Africa, and it just changes your whole life. This morning, there were a couple letters that came through. They had this a group of Quakers who are doing an extraordinary job in Washington, D.C., lobbying for peace-related issues, and I'd love to send them a check. And then there's a woman I know who teaches literacy by phone to those who are literate but want to teach literacy training to those who can't read. And I'd love to send a big check or any kind of check to someone like that. So there's where my envy comes. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that I have to watch. And I don't recognize I've slipped into that kind of negativity until I sit myself down and says, okay, what's this about? And then I have to confess that and make it right in my spirit.
Probably we could say, what's number two on your list, Dave? But that gets tiresome people listening. We've given illustration.
So we're just asking
trying
people
to be vulnerable.
People to do the same process, you know, same process of looking in and saying, what is the besetting sin in my life?
So like Sprague in his book writes, it's just good. You name it, and then that, in a sense, sets you on the right journey because you say, that's a problem, and I got to be careful in that area.
Well, and I think we ask God to help us with that. Or we might even ask our friends or our family members to say, okay, I have a terrible critical spirit. You see it in the way I use my tongue. I'm so sorry. The source is this critical spirit. In my soul, there's a critical spirit. So will you pray with me? Will you gently remind me when I'm getting critical? Will you call me to account? I mean, that can be done with family and friends, trusted advisors. So that's one of the ways we overcome having a besetting sin.
Yeah, it's wise to be aware of the tactics of your enemy, because the enemy will use that. It will be like the guy on the phone with me.
Knowing that you're senior, and he's got your check numbers, he's got your home phone number.
How in the world he got my check numbers, I don't know. And Commonwealth Edison didn't know either, but he had them. And boy, it was amazing to me.
And you would be absolutely befuddled by that attack. That's not, you don't work with people like that in your life. You don't go into a group thinking there's going to be a deceiver in here among these folks. But that's the same approach we have to take when the enemy comes against us, and he will. That's what we're saying to people. He will come against you, so you want to watch out.
So you're working ahead of the game. You're
right.
Saying, I know that's going to happen. I've got another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is harder to break, a good habit or a bad habit?
Oh, well, I know the answer, and I know that you know I know the answer, but a good habit is as hard to break as a bad habit.
Isn't that interesting, though?
It's really interesting, isn't it?
Basically, because you set up a pattern. In fact, when you establish a good habit, say you're talking about your prevailing sin, and then you begin to establish a good habit in relationship to it, you almost make yourself
invincible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ways you can do that is by checking yourself every day, maybe at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or the next morning, I do my devotional work in the morning. And you look back in the day before and you say, is there any point in that day where that prevailing sin took over and I succumbed to its temptation?
I succumbed again.
I blew it again. Mm-hmm. Oh, I blew it again. God, forgive me. Give me strength to recognize it today so I don't give in to it. That's how we develop a good habit.
You do it the next morning as you look back on the day before. At the end of the day, I rework my day. And it's amazing to me, just in the quiet, how the Holy Spirit will speak and say, did you realize that you didn't give that person full attention? Mm-hmm. You were somewhere else, and then you left quicker than you should have. And that person really wanted help, but you basically gave them the message that you were too busy for.
Yeah, and your schedule was, your to-do list was more important to you than that person's need.
Now you're getting really personal, and just you talk about yourself and I'll talk about
I was just a for instance. Anyway, dear listeners, but what we'd like to say to you is this is a tool that we're giving you, these tools and these suggestions for you to overcome your besetting sin and combat the scammer who's liable to come over the phone or at your door. Catch you by surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was doing real well, and then all of a sudden this crazy interruption came and got me upset and threw the whole day off. That's what besetting sins are like. We're dealing with an enemy who wants to destroy. That's Peter. Careful. Watch out for attacks from Satan.
Your great enemy. He prowls around like a hungry, roaring lion. looking for some victim to tear apart.
That's him. Yeah, that's him. So anyway, if we can get people to hear us, it's saying, okay, see if you can come up with what that besetting sin is. If a person listened to us right now and says, I got five besetting sins, what do I do?
Start with one.
That's right.
Pay down the one account, like we're being taught in financial congress. Pay down one charge card, then you go on to the next one. So start with one.
Yeah, and then be glad. You say, I only got four of them left. Pretty soon I'm only going to have two of them left. And boy, when I am free.
Then I will be indomitable.
Yeah, I will be. Anyway, our desire is not to put guilt on people.
Mm-hmm.
Not
to
at
be
all.
Helpful.
It's to be helpful. And that's because Jesus has helped us in so many, many ways. Have a good day, friend. A really, really good day.
You've been listening to the Before We Go podcast. And if you would like to write to us, please send us an email at the following address, hosts@beforewego.show. That's all lowercase letters, hosts@beforewego.show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and share on whatever platform you listen. This podcast is copyright 2025 by Mainstay Ministries, Post Office Box 30, Wheaton, Illinois, 60187.